ready for
Rush
tonight. How about you, shithead?
Hey!
You are listening to my show with Undercover Steve.
I was brought up to believe, belief has failed me now. The bright glow of optimism abandoned me somehow. Philosophy consoles me in a clockwork universe. Oh, life goes from bad to worse. I still choose to live. Find a measure of love and laughter, and another measure to give. Oh, I still choose to live and give even while I.
Yeah, I'm hearing all kinds of things. We got
Gary
and Chris.
That's right.
Okay, Gary
hey,
sounds pretty. I was gonna say Gary sounds pretty loud.
Who sounds loud?
Gary does.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know if I can turn.
No, don't, because the louder the better. As far as my recording goes, this is a new laptop, and it's apparently not as sensitive as my last one. But
Steve, I'll record this as well, and that way, if for some reason you don't like the quality, let me know, and I can probably email you or upload something that you can download.
Oh, yeah, awesome. Yeah, I appreciate that.
So I'll get back going here.
All right.
I don't have a recording device, but I'll record it anyway.
All right. Well, I think it should be good. Just it's been a learning process getting used to the new laptop and having to change all the settings and stuff.
If Steve's recording fails and my recording fails, Gary, you're in charge of writing a transcript of a conversation.
I'm going to be typing every word that everyone says. I already have been. I have a stenographer's equipment here, so we're good.
Awesome.
Awesome.
All right. Let me preface this conversation with the fact that I have met both of you guys through the rushforum.com or whatever it's called. You know, so although Chris, I think, never goes on there, but me and Goober are on there every now and again.
Yeah, like 25 times a day now and again.
Yeah, pretty much.
On the weekends, I'll just go through some of the posts. As I've told you before, Steve, I have an aversion to providing content in forums because I always get sucked into some kind of debate, discussion, or someone takes what I'm saying out of context, and then I have to re-explain or elaborate, and it's just too much stress for me. So.
Yeah, and it's like the same couple of dozen people over and over for the most part.
It's like arguing politics on the internet almost, so I try to just stay away from it.
It's worse.
I stay away from arguing politics too, but arguing albums and, you know, a rock group, I can handle the dissenting opinions and the controversy that ensues.
And there are many. There are many, yeah. As we have come to learn. I know that was my initial shock with the forum, was that you always figure we're all Rush fans, we are one. We are not. That's pretty safe to say from the conversations. But
can you chalk that up to the fact that Rush is a progressive band that has changed their sound so much, so you have snippets of albums that some people like more than others, and so you get into debates over whether the Farewell to Kings and Hemispheres and 2112 albums hold up against the Power Windows. I'm sorry, the Distant Early Morning, Power Windows, and
yeah, well, that's. To me, that's a generational thing. I was going to kind of get into that in a little bit, but since you brought it up, Basically, the crux of this conversation was, now that there's a new Rush album out, I thought it'd be good to get two of my favorite Rush geeks to discuss it with me. And I think we all kind of come from different eras. Well, you two might come. Well, no, I think Gary, you're closer to my age, so you might be closer to my generation. I'm pretty sure Chris is a good amount younger than me. He's more of a 80s Rush fan and on, because we've had this discussion in the past on my show as to where my foundation comes from, the 70s into the 80s.
I was just going to say, just to clarify for Gary, I came into Rush when probably right around the Roll of Bones album came out. So I sort of...
You're like third generation.
Yeah. Rush. So I started with the Presto Roll of Bones, and then I went back, you know, in reverse chronological order, and Hold Your Fire is still my favorite album, although Clockwork Angels may eclipse that. I want to say right now that there's a chance, but that might eclipse it. But yeah, so I go back. But I will say this, Permanent Waves is really high up on my list, too, for favorite albums.
Well, I got into Rush in 1981, right after Moving Pictures came out, heard him on the radio, fell in love with him immediately, was too late for the tour, ended up seeing him on the Singles Tour. By the time that came around, I had all their back catalog and just got every new album from there. Let me just clarify, somebody mentioned earlier, Rush has a new album out?
Yeah, kiss my ass.
Was I supposed to have listened to that before we had this conversation?
I know you did, because I saw your posts on the forum.
Are you talking about Clockwork Angels?
Yes, I am.
Oh, my bad. I was confusing it with something else.
No, well, we're going to get to that.
It does feel like Clockwork Angels has been out for a long time. The hype goes up.
Yeah, well, we've been listening to like a third of the record or a quarter of the record for the last 2 years. But I think it's important to establish that we all kind of come from different generations of it. Of course, when I first got into Rush, Permanent Waves had just come out, but I had heard Hemispheres as my first record. So
nice.
I'm not even technically first generation Rush. I think I'm almost second. But for the purpose of our conversation, I think I'm more of a first generation Rush fan. Goobs, you're a second generation, close to, you know, kind of straddling first to second. And then Chris, I think you come in like the third generation. And now that we have the new millennium version of Rush, there's a fourth generation of all these newbies that are on there now that are like 15, 16 years old that we see posting all the time. So I think that plays a role in some of this stuff when we talk about this new record, which of course came out this week. I have it on vinyl. Now, I guess, how should we start this? Who wants to?
Well, I'd like to just preface it by saying that my, you know, thoughts and opinions about the album are really pretty preliminary. I mean, I've listened to the whole thing maybe 8 to 10 times. And I just know from my experience, especially with a group like Rush, it takes a while to really digest it, to really be able to, you know, place it in the discography, you know, in terms of what's your favorite or how good it really is or how it compares. So I'm really wildly enthusiastic about it, and I'm happy to talk about it, but I feel like it's, you know, still pretty early to be talking about it.
Yeah, I would, and to sort of piggyback on that, I would say as well that my opinion is sort of provisional in that regard. But I will say this, is the first album since probably Test for Echo, but I would say even more so, that I have taken to almost virtually every track on the album. Whereas with the previous albums like Stakes and Arrows and Vapor Trails, there were songs on there that I gravitated to, one or two, that I would listen to over and over and over again, more so than the rest of the album. And I could probably only name two or three song titles off of those two albums because of it. This is the first album in a long time that I would probably say with confidence it'll probably be in my top five of all time, just because of the fact that I listened to so many songs on this album over and over again.
Okay, do you want to give your initial read on it then there, Goobs? What you think of what you've listened to on your 8 to 10 listens?
Yeah, sure. I mean, pretty much there's the only track that I consider kind of a weak track is BU2B2.
Okay.
And really only because, I don't know, it's just kind of a downer. It seems kind of unnecessary in the placement of the album. It seems like you got... Hold on, let me look at the album here. You've got The Wreckers, going into, then you have Headlong Flight, Wish Them Well, and The Guard, and all three of those are really pretty positive. It's like the hero of the story has kind of come to a positive place in his journey. But BU2B2 kind of like, it's almost like, oh, but here's my lingering doubts before I fully embrace, you know, the good stuff in life. It just seems like, you know, maybe because of the alchemical thing with the 12 alchemical elements and the clock, like they wanted to have a 12th track in there, and that was like the one that was kind of, feels like it was kind of shoehorned in. But outside of that, and that's like a minute and a half, you know, I like or love every other track on the album. You know, there's plenty more I can say about it, but I'll just say that, you know, as a preliminary. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll give my kind of rough view on it. I mean, being that we've had the benefit of three of what I consider to be the three of the strongest songs on the record, we've had our hands on for two of them for 2 years, one of them for the last couple of months, which of course is Caravan, BU2B, which open up the record, and then Headlong Flight, which ends the third side of the double LP. Those, to me, are the three strongest songs on this record. I like those songs the most, I think, overall. But the only disclaimer there I'll say is I'm still kind of getting used to the album myself and chewing on it. But I walked into this album, in all honesty, with the attitude of, particularly because of Snakes and Arrows, which I've come to accept that at this point in their career, they're in a very mid-tempo melodic range very often. It seems to be where their writing style, Getty's writing style, has kind of landed for the most part. And that's the stuff that I kind of, I'm wishy-washy about on Snakes and Arrows. And I knew there would be a certain amount of that on this record, and I think there is. I'm going to say the songs that kind of jump out at me and that I'm really digging on. Now, of course, the three that I mentioned that we already have, and then the actual title track, Clockwork Angels, kind of falls into that mid-tempo melodic range that I don't necessarily dislike it, but it doesn't grab me. The songs that have the hooks for me is like Then the Anarchist is already big. And for me, the sleeper, like the kind of sleeper hook giant to me is Carney.
I knew you were going to say that, because you love the heavy metal, and those songs are heavy, heavy metal.
It's where they're hard rock and riffing out, and they're just kind of going off in their own directions. But the thing about Carney is it has that one melody line to it that really runs through it.
Spreading lights and fire signs. Demon music.
is just such a sleeper harmony to me that I just love that melody line. I don't know the lyrics to Fake It right now off the top of my head. Halo Effect is the mushy, you know, emotional song that I skip. And then you get Seven Cities of Gold, which is another great rockin' tune for me. It's got a lot of really good, it's like forward running kind of grooves to me, where it seems like they're like, you know, barreling downhill a little bit, a little loose, a little crazy. And then the Wreckers falls back into that melodic mid tempo where he's really going for the melody, which there's a lot of strong melody on this. That's the way Getty seems to write a lot now. And then Headlong Flight has become almost a favorite as much as Caravan for me. I really, really love the sentiment that song pushes out, the emotion to it, the melody in that. And then the BU2B2, which is basically, you know, I understand why it's there, but it doesn't need to be. Wish Them Well is another hard driving riff laden tune, so I cop to that immediately. And then The Garden, I'm still trying to wrap my head around, because it really, really, really rests in that mid-range melodic sphere that they seem to, you know, live in more often than not now.
Well, I have a lot I'd like to say about each song, but why don't I, you know, let Chris go and kind of give his rundown.
Sure. So I think, first of all, I have to say that the melodic part is something that I gravitate to. I'm very much a pop music fan. I say that not out of pride, other than the fact that that's just the way it is. So
we've talked about that. And I think that's why I gravitate more towards the heavier, chaotic songs. And then I think the later generations, I notice a lot of the kids are heralding The Garden as the best song they've ever written, which, you know, I'm going to obviously take issue with that.
Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit about The Garden. Essentially, to go song by song in a very brief way, I would basically say that first five tracks, to me, are the best five sequential songs that just seem to fit each other than any other album that they've had. Now, I always talk about, like, their opening first two songs on albums. Like, I think that Force 10 and Time Stand Still almost bundle in a very melodic and a very harmonious way. I think there's other albums like Dreamline to Bravado just seem to, like, they fit like two pieces, two puzzle pieces. So, but here I would even go all the way into the fifth song, Halo Effect and Seven Cities of Gold, I'm still on the fence about. And then the last five songs seem to almost balance out the first five songs. They seem to really, whoever developed the track list, the order, I thought did a great job. I would say The Anarchist is probably the one song that really stands out to me as being my favorite right now, primarily because the drums, kick drums and everything, give you this expectation that this is a rocking song. It's a song that's driving throughout, and it does. Whereas in some of the other songs, where when the riffs get a little heavy, there is a pause in the action with some melodic stuff, which, you know, I like on one hand, but on the other hand, I really like songs that just completely drive from beginning to end with no break and no let up in that regard.
Like Caravan, pretty much.
Caravan, yeah. So the one thing I guess I'll say on BU2B2 is, until I read the book, which I'm going to get, there might be a purpose for it at that point. Maybe it syncs up with something in the novelization of this album that will provide some clarity in the story. Other than that, I agree with you guys that it would be a skippable song. Headlong Flight, you know, then into Wish Them Well, The Garden. I think The Garden, to me, the opportunity to be my favorite track, because the more times I listen to it, the more my expectations of what the song is goes, especially in the piano part, it surprises me. Like, for example, a lot of times when there's piano brought into rock songs, it's very simple and it just goes up and down scales. Whereas there was, you know, it's hard for me to really, you know, focus on the piano because it's sort of down in the mix. But it seems to me like there's a little bit of weird time changes. I don't know, maybe that's the wrong expression, but there's some weird, like, syncopation or just some chords or something don't seem to fit melodically like I would expect. So I wonder if maybe The Garden is doing something there where they're playing with it from a mathematics standpoint, as opposed to just a very predictable melodic structure.
Okay. Any thoughts on that, Gareth?
Well, is it okay if I just kind of, you know, go through the tracks?
Yeah, yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, so Caravan and BU2B, I was actually very pessimistic about this album, as people on the Rush forum board would know. I did not like the tracks originally. Caravan, I thought, had cool musical breakdown parts. The lyrics I found kind of somewhat uninspiring when compared to a song like Far Cry, which just seemed to have a more universal appeal to the lyrics. BU2B, I didn't like the seemingly down-with-religion type preachiness. Not because I'm like this big religious fanatic, I just didn't like the preachiness of it, and, you know, kind of reminded me of Faithless and, you know, a couple other Rush songs. But I have to say that with the new mix on the album, greatly improved, and, you know, I'm almost a little embarrassed to say, but heard in context, it works. You know, the whole context of the Watchmaker isn't necessarily God. It really seems more like a character in the story that's a little bit, you know, amorphous, not really quite sure what it is, except this guiding, you know, principle within this universe. But it's not necessarily like down with religion. It's down with what I was brought up to believe, you know, taking it more literally. So I really am appreciating those songs a hell of a lot more. I think they're really strong songs now. Clockwork Angels, my favorite song easily on the album.
And for the record, in the time that it has taken me to drive home and start editing this interview, I've completely changed my evaluation of Clockwork Angels, the title track. Totally.
Because it's so progressive, because it goes through so many changes, and I just love the melodicism of the lyrics. Chris, I would really recommend, as soon as you can, read the book, because it enhanced my enjoyment of the album and my understanding of the songs placed in context. It really is a story. It really is a concept. It may be somewhat of a loose concept, and that's probably good, in that it's a loose enough concept that the songs generally work on their own, except a song maybe like BU2B2. Anarchist Incarnes, I really enjoy. To me, I really like the lyrics. A song to me, for Rush, starts with the lyrics. I don't necessarily feel this way about other groups, but for me, they're so strong lyrically, they're so meaningful, that if I love the lyrics, I'm going to love the song. If I don't, it takes me a little longer, or I don't even notice the music as much if I don't like the lyrics. So the Anarchist Incarnes, I'm really enjoying. They're really, really heavy, and I find them like just not as melodic. Like, until I read the lyrics, I didn't even understand a lot of the lyrics, and you know, they're not necessarily that hook laden, but they're really strong songs. They're really intense songs. Halo Effect is pretty good. You know, it's a pretty good mellower track. Lyrically, I think it's okay. It's not my favorite, but I enjoy it. Seven Cities of Gold, love the chorus of it. I'm actually gonna just find it and read it, just because it just completely blows my mind. Hold on one second here, going through the book. The whole glowing in my dreams like hallucinations, glitter in the sun like a revelation, distant as a comet or a constellation. I mean, that's just pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Wreckers, one of my absolute favorites. Love the lyrics, love the sentiment of the song. It's a catchy song. It should have been their first single, I thought, because it's such an accessible song. Unlike Clockwork Angels, which I love the title track, my favorite, but really not that commercial a song at all. The Wreckers is very commercial. Headlong Flight has grown on me, like, consistently. I mean, at first I thought it was pretty good, then I wasn't so sure about it. Now I'm absolutely loving it. Definitely one of my favorite songs. Wish Them Well, people kind of put that song down a little bit, but lyrically it's really cool. It's just about forgiveness and letting the past go, and kind of turning, not necessarily turning the other cheek, as Neil said, but kind of like people who bother you and things that bother you just walk away and move on. So I love the sentiment of it. I love the catchiness of it. And The Garden, I don't think Garden is definitely not my favorite track on the album, but I love it. Definitely not the best track they've ever written, but it's a really emotionally powerful song. I mean, the lyrics are fantastic. It builds. It's just, you know, if this is their last album and that's their last song they ever write, I think they ended it on a great note, because it just says so much, you know, about life in a positive way, and I really like that. Sorry, I know I went on and on and on, but...
Well, what I really like about this record is how it starts out, where it's really focused on this story. And by the time you get to the last side of the albums, it's really kind of shifted to be kind of more of a description of his own personal journey at this point. And I think that's where the BU2B2 and all that really ties in, is how life... basically is, you're going to take a lot of two steps forwards and steps back, and
right.
I think that's what he's conveying. And of course with Wish Them Well, carrying anger is a lot of effort and it's draining, and I think that's, you know, a big part of the point of that, which is a great concept to put forward. It's just funny, because the way you guys gravitate towards the more the songs that I don't. And it's because I think of that generational thing, as to where I like the heavier stuff more. And I mean, that's a big reason why Snakes and Arrows wasn't such an amazing record to me, was because, and I know it's my preference. That's why I don't say, oh, it's the worst album they put out, it's their fault. It's no, their style and writing focuses have changed over the years. I mean, they always change. But you could just tell, you know, I like the way the more mellower songs come across on Vapor Trails, but you know, and like a lot of the stuff on this reminds me kind of it's in that same vein that the Snakes and Arrows songs were on, you know, where they were that more mid-tempo, mellower, you know, melodic approach that they take. So it's just funny how you guys pick those songs out and I pick like the ones in between them.
So when we talk about like Snakes and Arrows and to a certain degree Vapor Trails, the one thing that seems to have stood out to me, actually there's several things, but I want to talk a little bit about it to get you guys' take. I thought the vocals was really mixed well on this album and better than the previous two albums. And so I have to say that Nick Raskolnitz, I think, has probably done a very good, you know, definitely earned his pay in producing this album. I think that you have Geddy's vocals mixed well within the context of the music and properly chosen when to have it a little bit more subdued with a little bit of effects and things like that, some of the overdubs. Where in the previous two albums, you know, I know it's fashionable to dig, you know, to dog Geddy's voice. So understand that I don't have a problem with his voice. But I have a problem sometimes when his vocals sort of dominates the music, because I've always felt like his vocals is much like his bass playing is melodic. It's very outward for the music. But I've always thought, so it's just the strength of the band has always been the low end, the bass. But I always felt like his vocals was more of a backing instrument in that regard, sort of how they use keyboards and certain guitar effects. And I think that it wasn't so overt in this particular album than it has been the last two, where it stands out to such a degree that you almost feel like it's distracting in a way. And again, I'm not trying to say his voice is terrible. I'm just saying it just seems out of balance compared to where the strength of the music, the instrument playing, normally comes in. So, you know, there are times, and with that being said, it seems to me like Geddy's really passionate about this album. His vocals comes across as very, very enthusiastic and full of energy. But I think Nick did a really good job of determining when to have that come out, you know, up front, and other times when you have a little bit more subdued.
Yeah, rein him in. It's funny when you mention this, because it ties into another point I was going to make, is these songs to me, especially the songs I like and the songs I'm starting to get a bigger feel for, like as far as I'm concerned, all bets are going to be off when we see them live, because I can kind of feel it with how this record goes that this stuff is going to be 10 times better live. Where his vocals, I mean, he'll have, of course, some backing tracks playing live, he'll be triggering them. But the concentration, I think, will be on his live voice, which I just think they're a creature of their environment at this point. They're creatures of habits, where they just can't resist to layer and use effects and do all that stuff. Because, you know, we all keep waiting for the Rush album where it's really straight vocals as opposed to all this layering. I know there's a lot of talk about that on the boards, about too much layering of vocal stuff and all that. And it's same with Alex, even though Alex has gotten a lot more upfront in the last couple of records. But I just have a feeling that even the songs that I'm like kind of on the fence about are going to really come across much better live. I think all this music is going to be, you know, so much better live, and it's going to take it to another level. So I'm like. This great adventure.